What if the paranormal isn't just something that happens to us, but something we help create? For centuries, stories of ghosts, UFOs, and monsters have shaped our cultures and our fears. Tonight on the Paranormal 360, we'll explore the psychology of the paranormal, where frequencies and vibrations meet science and metaphysics, and where archetypes and monsters emerge from the human need for meaning and survival. Joining me are two extraordinary voices, author and consciousness researcher Anne Saleem and legendary investigator Ron Murphy. Together, we'll uncover how psychology, science, and the paranormal form a bridge to understanding what is truly unexplained and what might be just reflections of ourselves. Here they are on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Anne Saleem, Ronald Murphy. Anne, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. So good to see you again.
Ron, it's a pleasure to have you on and get a chance to speak with you. And when Anne reached out to say, let's talk about the psychology of the paranormal. I love that concept. I love taking a deeper dive into a different element of the work that we all love and are passionate about to try to get a better handle and an understanding on what exactly is going on around us. What made you two decide to tackle this element of the paranormal when it came to, you know, kind of discussing what's going on out there?
Well, we met at a Dogman conference, actually, for the first time in Tennessee. We were both invited to attend, and I presented my my lecture, and then Anne and I started to talk, and it seemed that we had very aligned focuses on how we thought the paranormal entered into our world, or at least how we perceived it, and how we basically created, if that makes any sense. And so we kind of, I guess we bonded by shared interests.
Well, that's not a bad way to begin a friendship and working on this. And the psychology of the paranormal. I mean, obviously people have thrown that topic around for a while, but what does it really mean to you?
You know, it's such a depth. And it's something that I've been exploring a lot on a personal level. And as I've been exploring it on a personal level, I've been able to open up. It's kind of a Pandora's box. And when we did meet at the Dogman conference, we ended up talking about it to the point where we actually presented at the next Dogman conference that we went to. And a lot of it dealt with werewolves that can be a part of who we are. This is, the wild man aspect, the shadow. And when I started to look into that aspect of us, so the shadow part and Jungian psychology, I was like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, shaping up to be something absolutely incredible that we don't really, you know, look into, I don't think enough, because a lot of people are afraid that if we look into the psychology of it, then we're saying that the paranormal isn't real, that now it's just a figment of our imagination. But that's not the approach that we're taking. It's one of those things where the deeper you dive into it and you understand how the brain actually works, then you can understand and separate what's the real paranormal. So of course, people in our field can get closer to the truth.
Yeah. I've said that it's very interesting to go into the forest, right? Everybody likes doing that. We like to look for monsters, but there's something about that gray area in our brain that is a vast, uncharted wilderness where many more monsters lie in wait. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for them both externally and, internally as well.
I've had moments in my 19 years of being very pressed into this field. Obviously, I've had weird experiences my entire life, and I've spoken about them, but last 19 years have been highly focused on the paranormal in all elements. And I've been Bigfoot and I've been ghost hunting and UFO searching and just about everything at one point. And there are times I step away into myself. I even think, is that experience real? Did what just happened actually happen the way I perceived it? Or did it happen because I went there with the expectations of having this type of experience? How do we start to separate our expectations from reality? And I know that's a big mouthful to try to, dissect, but do you have a pathway that you're starting to look at to help navigate that?
Well, I guess the best way to explain it is via an experience that I had.
Okay.
originally one of the very first encounters that I believed that I had. I was around 6 years old. And I remember lying in my bed, and there was this entity that seemed to be going around my bed. It went from the right down the foot and then up to the left. And then all of a sudden it was back to the right side again. And at one point too, I remember looking back or thinking back upon it. And it was like, there was this entity just standing at the end of the bed, and it's staring at me. And it looks like this, like a reptilian type of alien.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I went into the psychology. That was one story that I just never really told. It wasn't a part of what I had in my book. And through the therapy that I've had, I actually uncovered that this was not a true encounter. I had an actual traumatic event happen from a trusted person. And the brain is so incredible that it chose to input a false memory as a coping mechanism. And since I already had a background in believing in aliens and these things, it was only natural for my brain to put those pieces together.
Right. That false screen, right? That yes. We put in, and a lot of people blame the government for these false screens, that we're dealing with the government in shady conspiratorial ways, that these UFO encounters and strange creature encounters always seem to have a man in black element to it. Somebody will visit you, something will happen. And a lot of people have come to believe that they had veiled memories. What they thought were aliens were actually being inspected and looked at by research facilities, medical facilities, that, you know, they realized once they broke through that kind of weird barrier, they could see humans, not aliens. So this has been a story that's been spinning for a while. So how do we know? I mean, gosh, Anne, I've talked to so many, to be specific, women in the paranormal field that have a lot of aggressive, angry spirits around them that seem to be physically or mentally, spiritually abusive towards them. And as I get to know them, I realize that they're living a life that way, that they're living one bad relationship after another. And I often wonder, are you really having these paranormal experiences? And I don't want to be dismissive. You know, does what you're dealing with, is it easier to put it off on spiritual activity and negativity attacking you from the outside? Because, well, then you have a reason to feel powerless. What can I do? I can't put my hands on it. I can't get rid of it. It's a little bit easier than I'm just in a really abusive spot in my life and I don't know how to escape it.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. There is a lot of projection that happens. And then we also get into, this is where we can get into like frequencies and everything, because I really truly believe there's no such thing as separation. Number one, everything is connected, and we are the most powerful magnets. The energy that we send out is the energy that we're going to receive back. And so it's very true that as you are, so you become. As you become, you know, so is your whole world. So the thoughts and everything that you put in, you do create your own reality.
But then couldn't it be said that maybe that's what attracts these darker elements and energies to you, as somebody who's abused,
yes.
Somebody that, you know, whether it was physically, psychologically, or sexually abused, maybe you're not masking, maybe you're just drawing the attention of other spirits and elements that have that same predilection to do these type of things. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back, my darklings. Let's take a look at the psychology of the paranormal. Tonight, my guests, Ronald Murphy and Celine, were discussing many different elements to paranormal experiences. And just before the last break, I threw out there, could we, because we are victims in life of certain things, could we be drawing that element to us? Ron, I'm just curious, as an investigator and researcher as well, what are your takes on that? It was the chicken or the egg. Was it we're really being abused, so therefore we're projecting it on Bigfoot, ghosts, fairies, whatever? Or are we being abused, therefore we're drawing that type of energy towards us paranormally?
Right. Well, the more I research, the more I'm thinking there are people out there that are like paranormal hotspots. They're naturally in tune to the environment around them or what have you. But it seems as if things can manifest themselves around certain people. And whenever you mentioned women earlier, it seems that women are indeed, for better or worse, one of these conduits in which we can go into, you know, other realms. You know, putting psychology aside, and we're just going to play the devil's advocate here for a second and talk about the paranormal in general. It seems that there are things out there that are unexplained that women naturally sense and can interact with, you know. So we tend to call it the paranormal because we don't have any other kind of words for it. But I think that women are also one of those types of, you know, they're marginalized victims in society where things happen to them and, you know, they're supposed to be quiet about it or mask it in some way. Now, I also find it interesting because there's such a stigma related to men's mental health that oftentimes whenever men are broaching the subject about, you know, channeling certain things or talking about abductions or their encounters. And I know that Ann and I recently had an experience like this when we interviewed somebody. It seems that there is a great trauma there as well. But men don't like to talk about that kind of stuff. I have been in this field for long enough to understand that there are things out there that are not explainable, right? And they're just not in my mind. I mean, things have been recorded and filmed and things like that. So there are agents acting on our environment, you know, call them paranormal, what have you. But I think also that once we even deal with the paranormal, that reality of what we're experiencing is in our mind, because what happens is that experience no longer exists. It's just a memory. It's not like I can say, here's my experience and show it to you. And every time I tell it and retell it, it's going to be a little bit different. And also with the passage of time, it becomes like a game of telephone. So there's going to be nuances that continually flux and shift to the point that it becomes something completely different. Now, that all being said, when we talk about, you know, everything from the Patterson-Gimlin film to the Barney and Betty Hill story, to even, you know, we look at ancient recordings of the unexplained, like in the Epic of Gilgamesh, you know, these are part of a culture. And in order to understand what was going on, we have to understand that culture and that belief system, because that all comes out in the interpretation of what was experienced.
Anne, would you like to weigh in on this one as well?
It's just, I mean, I love what you said, because it's true that as time goes on, so humans are so fallible and our memories are not what we would really love them to be. It's one of those things where I know too, that a lot of people, we don't want to think that our bodies can fail us or trick us or anything like that, because it's that direct reflection on ourselves and a failure. And that can be really hard to face. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, if we encounter a very traumatic experience, doesn't matter what it is, it could be a car wreck, it could be a family fight, it could be a cryptid encounter, and our brain is going to release a bunch of cortisol. That cortisol then is going to wash over the memory centers in our brain. And those memory centers then, later on, it becomes a game of telephone, because either A, we're going to have a completely false memory, B, we're going to have amnesia. And so therefore our brain, because it's desperate for connection, it's desperate to put those stories together, it's going to just make up these stories, make up these little pieces to be like, oh, the eyes were blue, but they might have actually been green. So.
And I think we see that in stories like with Whitley Strieber as well, too, is that, you know, he had thought what he was experiencing was an owl at first, right? He saw these eyes, and all of a sudden he starts putting things together to the point that it becomes an alien encounter. But whenever you read his account, he talks about this being also very natural, the inside of the spaceship smelling like dirt. And he asked to smell these creatures as well, too, to get some sort of bearing in reality. And they put their hands over his face, and he said it smells of like cinnamon. So everything that was going on in the supposed extraterrestrial encounter also had a very natural basis, too, as if he was grounded to our reality, but he was deciphering everything as being extraterrestrial related.
He's an interesting barrel of monkeys. I don't mean that disrespectfully at all. I know when I first interviewed him years ago, he was very emotionally distraught by his visitations. And at one point started yelling, "They raped me, they raped me." And talking to him many years later, he calls them the visitors, his friends. Mm-hmm. And I've wondered, is this some kind of Stockholm syndrome that you eventually, there's nothing you can do to stop these things from coming and abducting you. There's nothing you can do. You just give in because it's easier psychologically to accept it and make it feel like it's your decision.
Right.
Right. To put it off as no, this, I'm still being violated. But if I put the spin on it, I feel a little bit more in control.
Right. And I think that is the case. Again, like Ann said at the very outset of this, you know, we do create our own reality. And even if we decide to lie about it and fabricate it, it's still real to me. Right. So I think that's the other way we have to look at it. I know that when we interview experiencers, there's almost a kind of cult-like aspect to it after a while, because we are talking to somebody that is a part of a group that has very few people right into it. So we see people that are not necessarily very popular in the real world, not very, you know, of a high standard in the real world, but in conferences and such like this, because they had this experience, now they are being, you know, there's some fanfare around them. So again, it adds to the psychology. Do they have the experience and that's what brought them to the conferences, or are they at the conferences because they want the experience?
Right. Interesting concepts all the way around. We're going to take another break. We will come back. We've got more to discuss right here on the Paranormal 360.
Oh, are you reading me? Come in. Hello?
Greetings from the Shadow, and welcome to Shadowz. My name is Jeff Belander. I'm an author, podcaster, and explorer of the unexplained. For 30 years, I've been investigating the paranormal, UFOs, monsters, and things that bump in the night. Lately, you may have noticed how major TV networks and even social media networks have been pushing our favorite subject back into the shadows. I say good. That's why I launched Shadowz, a monthly underground publication that covers your favorite topics in depth by some of the leading writers and researchers out there. If you're looking for 30-second TikTok clips, go somewhere else. If you're ready for a deeper dive, put down your phone and pick up Shadowz. You can't find it in stores. This is old school print. Head to shadowzine.com and be part of the underground revolution. That's shadowzine.com, and I'll see you in the shadow.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Dave Schrader, along with Ann, Celine, Ron Murphy. This is the Paranormal 360. The psychology of the paranormal is our discussion this evening. It's kind of weird, right? Because all of a sudden we're taking a look at the fact that not everything is as we perceive it. Not everything is as cut and dry as we once hoped or thought it would be. A ghost is not always just a ghost. You know, I'm in the midst of grieving right now for a parent that just passed on the 4th of July. And I'll be here in his home and I think I hear something and I'm like, is this wishful thinking? Is it my dad's ghost letting me know he's here? Is it, you know, sadness and grief just wanting to have some connection still there? Do we start manipulating and turning it? But then other people come over and they start hearing things. Are they hearing it because I've put that expectation into their head and said, I've grown up in a haunted house my entire life. This house has always had something weird. I've never felt like it was my parents, and my mom's only been gone 9 years. My dad's been gone 2 months. So what accounts for the other 45 years that I spent in this house, right? Living and visiting. What were those noises? What were the things that were going on? It's so strange to think we are fallible because we have beliefs. We are fallible because we have desires to see and experience things outside of the normal. And sometimes we just need that pain to make us feel alive, right? You talked about the fact that people go to these conferences and they're something, because in their real life, they're an insurance broker or adjuster, and maybe they don't feel fulfilled, but they've had this experience with a creature or a UFO or a ghost that makes them suddenly entertainment or interesting to other parties. You know, it also falls in line with what I know about exorcisms and possessions. There are people that have had 3 month long exorcisms, beating the snot out of them spiritually and physically. They finally rid themselves of these beasts, and a year later, they're back at it again. And you find out it's because they felt empty and less important without this thing attached to them. So
yeah, these attachments put them off. Yes.
Is it truly the attachment that, you know, they're missing? Is it the intention that they're missing, or the attention that they're missing? And when they start having these experiences again, are they truly having another possession, or are they willing it onto themselves, all of the memories of what they've experienced in the past? So, gosh, how do you start to break that down and understand what's really taken place?
See, it's really difficult because, you know, I've been to many different conferences, and there was one that I went to, and there was somebody that was presenting about Sasquatch and it being something that was a part of their lineage, handed down through generations. And while this person was talking, they were also talking about how, you know, you can come to the property, and if they want you to see you, then if they want you to see them, then they'll allow for it. And it was this very gatekeeper, like, I am the divine, I am the special. And so come to me for, you know, XYZ. But then there was a point that the person stated, I'm not crazy. I know that I'm not. And it was a little bit of a tirade on this, you know, and I felt so much empathy and felt so bad when I was listening to this presentation, because a lot of people come in, and what's the number one thing that we all need? Connection. It's connection.
I would have said McRib sandwiches, but connection works.
Those are okay. But so when they come to us and they tell us these stories and they get our, you know, attention, and they're connecting with us in that moment, this is a really powerful moment for the attendees, the experiencers, and all of that. Now, with whatever they get from that, that's also, it produces dopamine. So they get this dopamine hit when they're there, and then they go home. And I mean, I get sad after a conference. I feel that, you know, the lowering of the different, you know, and so then they want to come back. And if they had a story, that story can get old after a while. So then they think, oh, I've got to cultivate this new one. I have to, whether it was real or not. So as researchers, it can be really hard because we're not therapists. However, we should, I feel, try to learn how to deal with things like cognitive dissonance and ambiguity intolerance, where, you know, and then also, you know.
Okay, hold your role there, Dr. Celine. For those of us, you know, lay people, what are those words mean?
So ambiguity intolerance is where you, and I struggle with it, you don't have an answer. So, you know, somebody's going to come and update the cable or something like that, but they don't know when they're going to come. And so you're sitting there going, oh, great. Now what am I supposed to do? And you have this anxiety because you're just unsure. But there's a lot of times in this field, we don't have the answers. There's a lot of possibilities, but we don't have any definitive answers. And we can, I mean, when you deal with ambiguity intolerance, it can be very uncomfortable, very anxiety inducing. So I think that we should think about that as we deal with, you know, certain cases. Cognitive dissonance is where you are wanting, like, it's a conflict. It's an internal conflict where you're wanting one thing, but you're feeling another. And so you're just conflicting inside. And so maybe this person really wants that connection, but they know that their story is false, or they, you know, they added this little bit. And these are all things that I think that I wish that there was a manual. I wish that there was, you know, where it's like, okay, you know, this is a symptom of this. This is what you should look for when you're, you know, taking the details of a case, and then being able to more gently go through it and being able to get closer to the truth, because then you can see what is the psychology presenting and what is more of the genuine experience.
Yeah. But there's really no vetting that goes on, right? I mean, people, whenever they go to conferences or even whenever they pick up a book about the paranormal, like, you know, a Bigfoot book, right? They want to read a litany of reports and sightings, right? And that's what sparks people's interest. They want to read about all the woo that goes along with it. So people then go out there and project this experience with all that kind of woo to make it, you know, palpable, to make it digestible. Think about it for a second. Look up 20 years ago, whenever we were starting, you know, in these fields, and we were going to Bigfoot conferences that were held like in a bar or something like that, you know. Now, whenever you go to these places where you pay $100 for a ticket to get in, you have a lot of people that are calling themselves experts, and nobody bats an eye anymore, right? You watch, you know, a paranormal television, and it's loaded with experts about, you know, in a field that nobody even knows what we're talking about when we look down that road. So people are getting fame. Sometimes they're making money on this as well, too. And so, like Anna said earlier, you have to change your story or come up with a new story. Just like in the literary world, there's the whole idea of publish or perish. Also in the paranormal field, because people are only going to listen to your story for so much time. And we can point out a lot of different paranormal celebrities through the ages where this has caught on. And I don't necessarily want to mention any names, but you can see how people's stories have changed to the point now that went from, you know, having ghost ordeals whenever they were younger to now dealing with UFO encounters and Bigfoot encounters on the same property. So we have this evolution into a world of the paranormal that's all encompassing and also, at the end of the day, very profitable and lucrative.
All right, we have to take a break in just a few seconds, and that's interesting. I do want to address the one thing when we come back about the experts in the field, because I stand in a different place than a lot of people, and I give a little bit more of a wider door, and we'll discuss it when we return right here to the Paranormal 360.
A vampire in Rhode Island?
A UFO crash in Connecticut?
A flying moose in Maine?
A haunted bridge that calls your name?
New England is weird.
Really weird.
Wicked Strange by Jeff Belanger and Frank Grace is your ticket to the bizarre. Ghosts, monsters, urban legends, and roadside oddities you won't believe until you see them.
So pre-order now on Amazon. It drops September 2nd.
Assuming the Black Dog of West Peak doesn't get you first.
Let's get strange.
Wicked Strange. Pre-order your copy now on Amazon.
Talking about the psychology of the paranormal, I will say I find one thing interesting, Ron, and I hear this at many different conferences. It to me is the new hot button topic, and this is no slight against what you just said, but everybody's shaking their fist in righteous indignation. There is no experts. Yes, there are. There are experts. What is an expert? An expert is somebody who has dedicated time to researching a field. Even in primatology, there are things that experts are guessing until they're able to capture and track this. Doesn't make them any less impressive or intelligent because they haven't actually shaken hands with a gorilla. So I think that the I get the point. What you're saying is we need to vet and understand things a little bit more clearly. But I also think there needs to be better parameters for what's expected to keep blanket statement. There's no experts. Listen, John Zaffis is an expert in the field of paranormal. The guy has been on multiple investigations, has been on multiple possessions and exorcisms. The guy is an expert at it. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He deals with it, right? There are people, Dr. Maria Mayer, who is a primatologist, but she's also researching the field of Bigfoot and has spoken at length about it, has studied it, has understood it. There are experts to this. Now, there are people that appeared on one 15-minute segment of My Haunted Hospital, and now they're being booked at events, and you know they're considered a paranormal expert. Sometimes that falls on the shoulders of the coordinators of these events because they don't want to put paranormal experiencer, just another experiencer. Paranormal expert gets your attention. Oh, somebody that's lived through this gets your attention. So sometimes the monikers are given inappropriately. Others, I think, are well earned in the field of what you're doing. There is no PhD for our field. There is no, I mean, you can take classes on parapsychology from, you know, Dr. or Professor Lloyd Auerbach. You could take them overseas, but they're not
I can't walk around with a PhD in parapsychology at this point. That's just not available. So how does one become an expert? It's the time and effort that they put into it. If somebody's been at it and I talk to somebody, I'm like, so you're an exorcist. How did you, you know, did you grow up in the Catholic? And no. Well, why do you call yourself an exorcist? Well, I go in and I help with deliverance. Well, deliverance and exorcism is kind of a different thing. What got you into this? Well, I watched The Exorcist about 200 times. I realized I had a strong backbone and religious conviction. And I came out to do this. And I thought, well, man, I used to watch The Dukes of Hazzard and Starsky and Hutch all the time. It doesn't mean I'm a cop or I know how to race a stock car. You know, the expertise has to be in the field that you understand, not just because you watched a lot of TV shows and reality shows. And this is no slight on reality TV as I've been a part of it. But the fact is, you are seeing reality. You're just seeing a very thin slice of it because you don't see all the boring stuff. You don't see us sitting in the dark for 8 hours where nothing happens. You don't see us sitting there listening to, with our headphones, listening to EVP that is not there for 8 hours of audio. You don't see all the boring things that go into it. So you do see a slice. And I do give people a lot more credit than I think other people want to because of the dedication that they put into the field of research. So I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater either. And the fact that, you know, we have to be cautious. Listen, it's a speculative field at best. Everybody coming into it should understand that we are all theorizing. I may know because I've spoken to 100 people that have had near death experiences. I may know what they've told me and I'll explain it to you. And I'll say, I'm no expert at this because I've never died and had this experience myself, but I can tell you what these people have relayed to me. And from different walks of life, different cultures, different financial, sexual, religious spectrums, and they all have this underlying theme. But again, you have to ask in that point, right, Anne? Because where did that theme come from? Did it come from TV shows and documentaries and movies and books that they've read? Or was this legitimately the first experience they ever had with this? So they had no, I guess they had no front loading. They had nothing to balance this on as though, well, everybody goes through a tunnel. Therefore, when I died, I obviously went through a tunnel. You know, I love hearing the people that had no idea about near-death experiences, what their experience was, and then share it with us, as opposed to the guy who's been an avid paranormal investigator for 20 years who had a near-death experience 8 years in, and it follows the same trail. It doesn't put me into a place of not believing him, but there's a lot more speculation in those accounts.
Right. Well, and I love this because, you know, there's so many. Okay. my brain is spinning. So it would be really great if this was more of a topic in regards to the expert word and what makes expert, and really start having that be part of the discussion within our field. Because I love the way that you put that. And I mean, technically, yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, it's thrown around without really good thought, without actual proper usage, you know, like you were talking about.
Yeah. Doctors are given the title doctor, but they have to continually educate themselves. They have to continually earn that doctorate, right? They're not just, that's why it's called a practice. They're constantly learning and practicing in the field.
Exactly. But, and see, this is the thing that's so fascinating about the field, though. So not only do we have this split, right, between what is an expert, who's not an expert, but then you have that split in so many other areas, such as, is Bigfoot woo? Is Bigfoot flesh and blood? Is, you know, all these different things. And one of the things that I would really love during my time here, however long I've got, is to figure out how to make a bridge. So that way we don't have these really hard camps that say, no, it's only this. Because the thing is we all have parts of a really big puzzle. Mm-hmm. And if we can come together, then we can, you know, we can actually build that puzzle piece, because maybe over there in that camp, they have that final puzzle piece that I'm searching for that I don't have.
I like that. And so I've tried to remain fluid throughout the 19 years that I've really sunk into this, is never pinning myself to one theory. I may start off with, this is my theory on ghosts. That has changed radically over 19 years. To this point, I say easily, there is no pigeonholing. There is no one answer. I think a ghost can be many things. It can be live. It can be dead. It can be recorded. It can be nothing more than a projection of your own memories. It can be a shared memory for multiple people that they're projecting into a room because of the expectations. It could be time slip phenomena. It could be us misinterpreting alien invasions, right? And they may be amongst us all the time. We're just getting started. Trauma Normal should be the title of this show. We'll be back with more right after this.